Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yep. How about this week's reality? Or well, this episode's reality?
Maybe this isn't a book or movie I love.
Good story. This is episode number 144, and we're going to talk about The Witch, which is a movie from 2015 and directed by Robert Eggers, a fellow that I hadn't heard of until now.
Me either. And this was requested by my daughter, Rose.
Yes.
Has been on a few previous episodes.
Yep, yep, yep.
I just want to say here, I trusted her so much. Usually she fulfills that trust, but I feel not so much for me this time.
Well, I did enjoy it. I thought it was good. And I use good in a certain sense of the word.
Well done, maybe? Or...
Yes. Well made. Well made.
Yeah, well made.
Yep. Yeah, well made. And for me, very, very thought-provoking.
Yes. Whether you like it or hate it, which is a strong word, but I'm using it, there is a lot to talk about in this movie. And that's what Rose wanted to hear. She wanted to hear Catholics talking about this view of religion, the movie, mm-hmm. all that stuff. So. All right.
Well, we'll try to do that.
Yeah.
You bet. So the movie was released in 2015. And... see how about a quick synopsis? So we're opening in 17th century New England. I believe the very first scene, if I recall correctly, is in a courtroom or a meeting hall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the church and the meeting hall were the same place. But the person that's standing there is one of the main characters. He's a father with a family. So he's got a wife and four kids.
Four kids.
Yep. And they're all standing there in front of this tribunal. He's really the one standing there. They're just with him, sort of stepped back behind him.
Right.
And he's being kicked out of this, what would you call it, a plantation, I guess? This, a fort or whatever these Puritans had built.
Their little town, their little community. Town, yeah. They're saying, literally, well, I wish they had. I cast thee out.
Right. So they said, well, you know, and we're not clear on exactly why, other than, you know, they're calling him prideful and I can't remember what other word.
Do they actually say prideful?
I thought that they did, but I could be incorrect since, you know, later in the movie, maybe I inserted that. But I'm trying to remember. I know that they didn't say, because of this, you are leaving. We're seeing the scene near the end of whatever the conversation is.
Yeah.
And so we don't know what he is being kicked out for specifically. And we just kind of figure it out later. But no one ever tells us.
No, but he is saying that they don't follow the rule of God as closely as they should. And his idea is the right idea. The way he sees the gospel is he's basically judging all of them and they are falling short. I mean, he doesn't say it specifically.
So the father is judging all of them.
Yeah, well, okay, he's just saying the true gospel is not being followed here.
Oh, and right. He's saying, okay, I just wanted you to be clear. He's
okay,
saying
sorry.
That, not the judge.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes.
He is telling them, he's on trial, but he's telling them that they're not doing it right.
Yeah.
And then he's being kicked out with his family.
So, you're okay with leaving the community? And he's like, yeah. And the wife gets this look on her face like, oh, yeah. And they grab the kids and head out of there.
And off they go. Off they
yeah,
go.
Yeah, and you're just like, whoa.
Yeah.
You've just told off the Puritans. Okay.
Right. So I'm trying to decide about spoiler territory here.
I think
if
we just say that then what we do is we see them on their farm. We see them go to the edge of the woods and kind of look like, here's where we're going to be. And then you see and you discern that it's sometime later because they have a barn and they have fences and they have a house. And so there they all are living together. And you start to see the influence of the way the family is and outside forces on them, maybe.
Yeah. Or not,
yeah. Like that.
Well, the witch. Yeah.
The witch.
Which is what the movie's called, right?
Which is what it's called. That's not really a spoiler.
No, it's not at all.
And the director did specifically make this because he wanted to show how the Puritans would have believed and thought and understood things to be happening.
Yeah. In an interview that I saw of him on YouTube, he said that this is a nightmare that a Puritan might have. So he's like, if I could lift a nightmare from the head of a Puritan and put it in your head, that's my goal.
Okay.
That's what he said in this interview. Yeah. So he was trying to create, well, he calls it a folktale, right? And, mm-hmm. and but the definition of a folktale, I think, is a tale that's passed word of mouth to everybody.
Oh, okay.
You know, so this is something, you know, that I can imagine being told to Puritan families, you know, oh, there's this family and they got kicked out and they were in the woods and oh my gosh, what happened, you know? And, you know, scaring their kids mad.
Oh, yeah.
Like mad, yeah. So, but that's, yeah, the subtitle's called A New England Folktale. So I think that the director worked hard to try to convey their worldview in this story as if their worldview was true.
Yes.
Yeah. So things that happened in there are things that a Puritan would understand.
Yeah.
It's truth, right?
Yeah. And I can understand that because I've read enough Nathaniel Hawthorne who, you know, was much
Nathaniel
further
Hawthorne,
back writing.
Yeah.
And he was writing about stuff like that.
Yeah, this makes me want to read some Nathaniel Hawthorne, and also I want to revisit The Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
When was that written? So we're looking at 17th century New England. That was after that, I think, right?
Oh, was it?
But we're talking about in the same ballpark though. Let me just look that up.
Let's see. Washington Irving.
Yeah, Sleepy Hollow. But I just got a hankering to read that. It's not
very
long.
It's that time of year.
It's fall, that time
which
of
is
year.
Why yeah. we're watching this, or
yeah.
why we watched it, right? Because
right.
it's October.
Yeah.
Our favorite time of year.
Yeah, Irving.
Okay, you're right. Early 19th century.
Early 19th, okay.
Although The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, this says 1820.
Okay.
And
yeah, 1820 is what I'm getting to. Ichabod yeah. Crane. Yeah, there are some really nice audio versions of that.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
And I was thinking specifically of Young Goodman Brown by
yes.
Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Young Goodman Brown. Now, that's the story where somebody's encountering the devil on a walk, right?
Yeah.
Is that it's the same one I'm thinking of?
Yeah, he's a Puritan. And this was, it says it takes place in 17th century Puritan New England, which he wrote about a lot. But he wrote it in, or it was published in 1835. So that's about the same time
yeah.
as
Neat.
The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. And yeah, he is saying goodbye to his young wife and going, she goes, well, sure, you have to go out on this of all nights of the year. And later on, you figure out it's got to be Halloween because he meets a guy on the way, his walk, who's quite sinister. And I don't want to spoil the story for people who don't know it. But
yeah. Oh, it's a good one.
I've gotten classics. I'll put the link.
Highly recommended.
Yeah, and after watching The Witch, I went and reread it.
Oh, cool.
Because he was wrestling with some of the issues that I consider to be problems with The Witch, frankly. And I think it's because as authentic as he could make it, Nathaniel Hawthorne or the director of The Witch, Nathaniel Hawthorne understood he had to do a little explaining for the modern mind who wasn't back then.
Okay.
He had to let people in a little bit. And I felt that in this movie, there were a lot of things that because he was building such a complete worldview for the Puritans, he forgot that, hello, I don't know all these things. So I was having to look up a lot of things about Puritans later, which I felt could have been dealt with a little bit better by helping us understand that, for instance, for Puritans, public confession was considered to be a good thing. So they do that several times in this movie. And those I would think should be moments when, oh, this is a chance for redemption. instead, what it does is show us how far this family has to go to be a happy family together.
Yes, indeed. So but, did you find in what you looked at that it was fairly accurate in its view, in its worldview, or not?
From the things I was looking at, like the things that I found didn't look like they were necessarily specifically represented. Like, for instance, the husband and wife, their main job is to get each other to heaven, salvation for each other. And in that, they're considered equal partners. The father leads the family, you know, and he does the big job work and the farming or whatever it is. The mother's job is educating the children in their religious education, although they both participate in that, but that's her main job. And so when I looked at those elements, I could take those elements back and go, I see darned little of these two people trying to interact with each other to get each other to heaven. I don't see the mother being responsible at all about her children in this area. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much of this we want to talk about. Do we just dive in?
I think it's time to dive territory? In. Yeah, let's dive in because that's where the interesting stuff is. So.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Yeah. When your twins, when your young twins show up talking, saying, Black Phillip told us this, any Puritan mother worth her freaking salt would have gone, what? No, the devil, exorcism, hello, something. Get back to the community.
Yeah, that does seem kind of like a disconnect, doesn't it? Because she would know what Black Phillip was. But us in the audience didn't make that assumption, at least not at first.
Well, I did.
Okay, yeah, because the goat is really used as a symbol for Satan a lot, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And
we never saw her at her best either.
No, I don't think we saw any of them at their best because one of the things that I did find is that, you know, community was super important to them. The Puritans didn't come over singly like a lot of other colonies did, or, you know, people from other cultures. They came over as family units and as church groups because community was everything. They had left the Anglican church because they're like, you guys are still pretty Catholic. You're doing some ritual. You got some vestments. I'm not happy about all this. You're not pure. And so people who didn't like them called them Puritans. That was originally a derogatory term. I don't know. I didn't get as far as looking at what they called themselves. Different names, I think, for different communities. But the ones who came to New England, you know, they would have been relying on each other. And that is what the New Testament shows us. Mm. It's you're not supposed to go it alone.
Right.
So when they are cast out, essentially, because they think they know more than everyone else, here's problem number one. And then when you see all the other things magnifying, those are the things that I saw reflected from what I was looking up. But again, I was having to look stuff up to get a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
Because if you
look at it. I can't argue with that at all. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was, you know, I was just assuming, okay, I'm looking at something that's not for my worldview. And then I just watched it. You know, I didn't, you know, so. I was thinking, okay, these folks don't think like I do. Let's see what happens.
Well, I know, but the problem is as a modern person watching a movie, you cannot disconnect it. So when the father is telling his son that he got the money for, was it the traps, by taking the mother's silver cup and selling it without her knowing and going, don't tell.
Yeah.
As a modern person, I'm going, whoa.
Yeah, right. I think that was intended too, because I certainly had that reaction. I was thinking, okay, well, this guy is not who he thinks he is.
Yeah.
You know, and because that's where I completely understood that this was unraveling as a family. Because for him to say that to his kid and say, you know, that's all they had were each other, you know, and for him to be a complete liar like that. And not only that, but to let other people be blamed for it.
Oh, I know.
Because he wasn't ready to tell her. He was going to tell her at the right time.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. But yeah, I could, in my head, you know, I certainly didn't accept that, oh, this is how they are there. I knew that was wrong. And yeah, from then on, you could just kind of see, you know, it's like, well, there's the, you know, there's so much of that happens. I think the first sentence that I told you about this movie is, hey, this is all sin and no redemption.
Yes.
You know, and that's really what it is. It sort of shows what the problem is to view sin without the redemption part of it, without forgiveness.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's because it's a horror story and this family is off the tracks and that opens the door for evil, or if that's because the modern way of looking at religion has seeped into this telling of the story, because there's no sense. I mean, at one point the father is, you know, he is throwing himself on God's mercy and his children. Save my children. I can't believe this is happening. And what happens? You know, the devil gets him.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, well, wait a minute. How would that be in their theology? And that's the kind of thing that really upset my husband. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like this kind of movie anyway, but he was interested. And he said, it's the family's feelings make the supernatural unnecessary. The supernatural is just kind of thrown in. It's not really, they're not really interacting with it. It's just kind of there doing awful things to them.
Yeah, this could have been one of those movies where the existence of the supernatural was ambivalent and you never really knew for sure.
Right.
But it's not that. It's no. For sure. You know, they, you know, we see the witch early, you know.
Right.
So, but you're right. You know, the stuff that they create in the way that they act is destroying the family. We don't need the witch to be destroying the family,
mm-hmm.
but the witch is. And it's almost like a presence, something that's pressuring, pushing, you know, and maybe affecting. But we don't know that for sure. But one of the things that I was thinking about, and I realized that this is from my perspective, you know, like when you read a myth or something like that, that's sort mm-hmm. of how I took this. And, you know, myths have things, you know, that you think about. But what I thought about is, you know, homilies that I've heard where a priest talks about sin, you know, the mystical body of Christ. And when you're sinning, you're even if you don't think you're affecting anything, you really are.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you think, well, it's really just affecting me and I just, you know, if nobody ever finds out, it's just going to be affecting me.
Yeah.
When what's really happening is you are affecting the fabric of everything around you. And that is the way that I viewed this family at the end. It was like they were all, the sins of the father and the mother may have just permeated, you know, the whole family. And it sort of created yeah. how they acted. Because even Thomason, who is like the best one, or the one that seems the most virtuous, even she lied, right? When she and she did it just to tease the kid, to mess with the little girl. But she says, "I'm the witch," right? And she teases that little girl. But you know that threw that into a sequence where. Now, when they're under stress, they think that she's the witch, and it comes mm-hmm. out, and now the doubt is in the dad's mind, and that lie permeated everything.
Oh, and that's a good point.
Yeah, and it opened up the door for everything that happened to her, which was the most horrifying thing, you know, you can imagine is, you know, trying to live a virtuous life and ending up where she ended up was horrible.
Well, and I would say, I have to say, the ending, I was like, really?
Yeah.
This is what you thought was a good idea? I mean, for Thomason, because I was like, why did you do this? You just saw what happened to everybody around you. And then I remembered, and this was clever, I thought, on the part of the script, was that she had dropped a hint earlier that she missed nice things.
Mm, she did.
She missed the good life when she was asking her brother, do you remember when we had glass windows?
Yeah, when they lived in England.
When we lived in England. Yeah. And so
apples.
She was kind of, she was
and
kind
isn't
of.
Isn't that interesting too?
Yeah. And when she's saying, Black Phillip, talk to me, like, you know, I want to hear you like my brother and sister did. And he's like, oh, what would you like? Would you like this? Would you like a taste of butter? Would you like, you know, pretty clothes? And I'm like, that's what you're going to sell your soul for? But she was young. She'd been through something awful. And this is kind of what she really wanted underneath anyway. She's like, I want some nice stuff.
Yeah.
I hate it here.
Black Phillip, you know, he said something like, you know, would you like to live deliciously?
That's it.
And it was the way that it was said. Chilling. It was really chilling.
Well, something that's interesting, too, is that maybe a reason that's kind of hard for me to accept everything that happened in the movie is because I am a modern person. And also, I know the way that Catholics think about Satan.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, Satan is real, but you have to give Satan permission, essentially. Tell me if I'm not right. I mean,
no, I'm not.
You essentially have to cooperate, you know, with temptations or whatever. And it can be really hard to sort out what's your own nature just going, I want this, or what's a temptation from the devil. It's best just to avoid all those things and rely on God's grace and everything. But when I was looking up about the Puritans, it was saying that they believed that the devil would cause a lot of hardships. Like, so if a crop withered or a family member grew ill, but they also believed this stuff was in line with God's will because God was all powerful. So they thought that God would use the devil, kind of like Job in a way, to test the faith of Christians or act out vengeance upon people who deserved it. And so it was important for you to respect the devil and fear his powers, but to despise him and fight him. And it says the devil existed to show Christians the wrong way of life, and Puritans believed they were resisting the devil by living simple lives according to God's teachings. A Puritan that lived a pious life and loved God was actively fighting the devil. Similarly, God would expose a person not living a proper life by allowing the devil to sicken or visit hardships upon him.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah. That's tough.
And that does show as, yeah, that actually works for us too, in a way.
It does in a way, yeah.
Not exactly.
Right, right. You know, Job was always a hard thing, you know, when you read the book of Job and you see, oh, here's Job. You know, he's really a model of what everybody, you know, strives to be. And then God's like, yeah, I'll make a bet with you. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. And then he just tears everything away from Job.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's more, you know, so Job to me is that who are you to question? You don't understand.
Yeah. Job is why do bad things happen to good people?
Right.
And the answer in the end is sometimes you don't know the answer.
Right.
It's a mystery. We can't solve it.
Who are we to question?
Yeah.
That, you know,
where were you when I created the world?
Where were you when I created the world? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, to think that the devil, wow, you know, so if there was a hurricane or something like that, that would be coming from Satan.
And you see people saying that. Remember Katrina? Somebody was saying that it was because New Orleans was so wicked, and I can't remember
oh,
who.
Oh, yeah, but that wouldn't have been Satan, though, would it? I mean, isn't that wrath
Sin
of
hurricane?
God? Yeah. I mean, but I remember somebody saying that. It was Pat Robertson or somebody like that. But wasn't he saying that was God doing that? Or was God allowing that to happen?
Oh, maybe so. I don't remember.
Because I don't know if they're thinking, well, Satan is loose and God lets Satan do that.
That's when somebody, maybe it was you, but somebody was like, no, if a hurricane hits Las Vegas, that's an act of God. hitting New Orleans is just how the weather works.
That's right.
Time,
that's how it works. Yeah.
You know, we need more than that. Well, so... yeah, so the thing that I found interesting was for a Catholic, this combination of a kind of a good and bad way of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the problem is you don't want to think about the devil so much that's all you think about, but you don't want to pretend the devil doesn't exist. It's this weird balancing act of, which
Isn't
I don't
it,
really
yeah,
think
Yeah, didn't C.S. Lewis say something like that? Well, it was in the Screwtape Letters. He said, you know, one of the letters said something like, one of the things that's good for us is too much interest and no interest at all,
right?
If both of them are equally helpful.
Right.
Yep.
Whereas I think the way we would think about it is if God is never going to use the devil like that. I mean, you know, the book of Job is poetic.
Mm-hmm, right.
It's a contemplation of this and an examination of this concept. It's not a historical book like Chronicles or Kings or whatever. And so, when we're thinking about it, God's not going to go, yeah, go ahead and rip everything away. The way I tend to think of it, and I think this is fine with church teachings, is more that God's going to go, I have tried and tried and tried to get you to listen to me and do the right thing, and I cannot get you to hear me, so I'm going to let you do what you want to do, and you're going to reap what you sow, and you're going to find out it's awful. Mm-hmm. Then maybe you'll listen.
Right.
Because you have chance after chance all along the line. And the devil just hates God and hates us because we are his. And hates people in general because he, you know, we are his. And he's going to do whatever he can just to piss God off. I mean, that's how that goes.
That's how that goes.
Well, I just, well put. It's this cold, horrible, vicious hatred and whatever. Because every time I do it, it's going to hurt God. Fine.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
I guess we're off track. I don't know.
No, we're not off track. Because, you know, this movie, it spurs all that. And that's why I liked it. But I liked the mood of it as well. I thought that he nailed the look of it. And I guess they went up to Canada because it was cheaper.
Oh, right.
And
okay.
Found a remote spot. They had to go to remote to get away from the logging where they were at. I think it was Ontario.
Okay.
So they were like really far away from civilization, really. The actor with the deep voice. My gosh, what a voice he's got.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, what is his name? We've got to
mention
his name.
And the way they were all dressed.
Yeah.
Well, and I liked where they were. I wish, honestly, I get that it's a horror movie. I wish that the color hadn't been so desaturated.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt it actually would have had more impact if it had looked more normal.
Hmm.
I get that it's a fairy tale.
Yeah.
But I just felt like you can't see them really living their real lives because you're being reminded every second that this is, you know, I'm telling you this story for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm being super picky, I guess.
No worries. No worries.
So
Ralph Ineson is his name. He was amazing. I thought the cast did a great job.
No, they were all really good.
Anya Taylor-Joy. She played Thomason. Was great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
she
Kate
was very
Dickey
good.
As the mother, she was frightening.
Yeah, and the mother's sin was that she could not get over her sorrow over the baby and take care of the family. And in that, the father was culpable because he wasn't helping her.
Yeah.
And really the answer is, this is one of the reasons why it's not a good thing to live by yourself and try to go it alone. For yes, you need God's grace, but you also need the community who helps shake you out of it, whether by being kind and supportive or just by being annoying. So you kind of have to wake up and deal with it. All that stuff helps keep you from being too self-absorbed. And that's why the kids started to all go wrong and she wasn't noticing, because she was worried because the baby hadn't been baptized. And somewhere, it might have been Rose told me this, they would baptize anywhere from 1 to 6 years old.
Mm. So it'd be horrifying to sit there and wait for that. And belief that if the kid's not baptized, you know, it's not going to heaven. How brutal.
Because
that's tough.
They believed, well, that's that thing of believing that we're all born with a corrupt nature.
Yeah. Yep.
Whereas for the Catholics say we're good because God looked at everything he created and said, this is good.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a horrible flaw.
Yep.
As Peter Kraft has said, we're like a masterpiece with a terrible scratch on it, but we're essentially a good thing. And so, although for a long time people would talk about unbaptized babies going to limbo.
Yeah, limbo, which was never an official thing, right?
Yeah, it was never an official teaching.
Yeah.
And I don't think they even – now that's just used against us, so.
Yeah.
You know.
It's one of the things, yeah.
Yes.
Did you feel that the mother wanted to go to the wilderness?
I felt like she was just like on the husband's side and she was going to do whatever. But
and that makes me wonder, though, because I agree with that. But I'm thinking, you know, to me, her character makes more sense internally to me.
Mm-hmm.
If she didn't want to go.
Yeah.
And she went anyway. And that made her feel extremely guilty about what happened to the baby.
Oh.
Because she didn't speak up and say, we're not going, we need to stay here, and this is what's right for us.
Yeah.
And she knew that.
And that would be her job. That would be her duty as the wife.
Yeah, and that's one of the things in the little bit of research that I did, you know, about the witches and stuff, and, you know, women being accused all the time of being witches. I can only imagine that a woman in that era would really just want to be quiet. Because of that, right? You know, we would kind of feel forced to be. Because if you become assertive and you're pissing off men, you might be accused of being a witch. Do you think that that's off base? Or
I don't know if that really happened because of that stuff. I mean, because when everybody came, you know, when they were letting the famous Salem witch trials, and it was those teenage girls who were allowed to do all that accusation, and the town is just going along with them. Once somebody from outside, an authority from outside, came in and went, wait, some, I can't remember who he was, a judge, came and went, no, we're shutting this down right now. You know, which is also part of being part of the larger community. But it was, they had to have actual reasoned trials. Now, maybe they wouldn't be reasoned the way we thought, but I think you had to have, I guess you could just accuse people, but I don't know. I feel
you've got someone in power, and then you've got somebody who is annoying you, and you're the one who has the power. And you're saying, well, you know, that's a witch. But that's also assuming, like in the Salem witch trials and stuff, did those people that were doing the persecuting believe in witches? Because I think that they did.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So they weren't saying, hey, if we could get rid of these people, if we say that they're witches. I think that they really believed in witches. But I think that having that belief that there are witches and they're among us, and then having someone fighting you would make you come to that conclusion and would have an effect on the females in the whole community.
Well, of course, and it opens the door for the fact that it was a more complicated issue overall than that. But the fact that everybody believes that there are witches, then, well, I mean, look at some of the beliefs we have.
Mm-hmm.
Look at a societal belief that's very strong right now, gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And look at people who, I don't want to go along with that belief. Depending on who you are and where you say it and what you do, like if you're a baker and you don't want to do it, you can be sued and taken to court and fined, and the court's going to go along with that.
Right. Yeah. There's tremendous societal pressure.
Right.
Yep.
Now, I don't want to get into, well, I guess I just did by naming gay marriage, but there's all kinds of stuff like that that people, we argue about that stuff now, but you get shut down on things like gay marriage.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to say against.
I agree with what you're saying. So there's a zeitgeist or whatever that everybody seems to have an agreement. And that's one of the problems that we as Christians have when we look at the future of the country is, you know, where's our place in it?
Right.
You know, if people are starting to shove aside these beliefs and not only that, but not even allowing us to have them.
Yeah, that's right? The thing. It's like, well, so, you can do this.
Yeah, so I understand what you're saying there.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, near the same thing where
well, or the communist trials in the 50s, you know, where it's there are just things that people, societies get all worried about one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain amount of unreason that takes over. Sometimes. And, you know, it's easy to look 20 years later and go, oh, well. But
yeah,
hindsight, I still can't believe, frankly, I look at things like the fact that black and white people couldn't get married.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
not that things, long ago. Like, and I'm just that, like, this, yeah, this
and
is
there,
insane.
There was, you know, I don't know. You know, maybe not the Catholic Church specifically, but other churches that, you know, it was the church teaching that. You
right.
know, where you're saying, well, it's against our beliefs for you to marry someone that's another race. And now it'd be hard to find a church that believes that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is that when you get those really strongly held beliefs that are part of your core belief system, and of course, none of those are as strong as the Puritan religious beliefs, which is what we're talking about. Anyway, in general, those kind of beliefs. But look how hard people will fight over stuff like that, fully believing they're justified. And some people, yes, will slide in there and go, ha, it's my big chance. But everybody else, it just kind of gets caught up in what's going on.
Sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, so I'm just trying to think of, you know, what would it be like to be a woman in this setting? And what are the men thinking about them in this setting? Would that have made her not say something to her husband, the mother? Right. For her to say, this is the most ridiculous idea that you've ever had, and you need to simmer down. And that would be her helping him get to heaven, right? According to what their beliefs are. But she's not going to say that because it'd be, I don't know, too strong for her or something.
At the beginning, she had a proud look on her face and determined and like, yeah. But I think that maybe later she should have spoken up sooner. You know, toward the end, they're all like, okay, that's it. We're loading the things up and we're getting out of here.
Yeah.
But, and I think she asked, let's go back. Let's leave.
Yeah.
And, she did. And she should have said that before then, before the crops were all failing.
Right. But why didn't she? Why didn't she is my question. Because I felt very strongly that she didn't want to be there. And therefore, my question was, why wouldn't she?
Oh, they had a terrible marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a bad mother, and she was self-absorbed by whatever, because we aren't shown all that stuff.
Right.
We don't know why they're not talking to each other. Why does he feel like he has to steal the cup? Why maybe doesn't he just say?
Maybe the reason that they're not talking to each other is maybe she did say something to him in private.
Right. And he feels like he has to prove to her that he made the right choice.
Yeah,
I mean,
and that's his problem, right? His problem is, I can't believe this stuff is happening to me. I am super pious. I am quite awesome. And therefore, I'm doubling down.
Right.
Right? I'm going to increase this decision twice.
Yeah.
You know, it's the, dare I say, the Donald Trump version of...
Oh my
I'm
gosh.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I don't need to be doing that. But the, but yeah, so he's just like, I am so very right that I'm going to, you know, this is going to go right for us because I am correct. And that's what God does.
Well, and in a sense, I think you mentioned Donald Trump and I'm like, and in that sense, what we're looking at is here's two people. We've got Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and they both made these very definite statements. Some people keep changing them. Some people don't. But the thing is whoever you may favor, and I favor none of them, these people who are the true believers, the true Trump and the true Clinton believers, they act like this father. They will not listen to anything else except what they want to see. So when you brought that up about I'm doubling down, I'm like, this is happening between these two people all the time, just from different pressures. I mean, we see examples of it continually, and they're in this echo chamber of they won't listen to people who are truly from the outside because those aren't the people that they're trying to influence right now. And this is the problem with this family. They have no one from the outer community. And I don't know what trouble they raised in the community.
So in society, we're creating these wildernesses, you know, these bubbles of – you know, with news outlets and everything like that, a person can go for a very long time without hearing something that is arguable to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we're only, you know, it's like us as Catholics ingesting only Catholic things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all we're going to do. We're going to ignore the rest of humanity and we're going to just Catholic stuff.
Right.
Which clearly we do not.
Well, and in fact, I'll get a link to this. I don't know if you saw the long piece that Stephen Gray-Dennis, that's the right way to say his name, wrote about Catholics interacting on the internet.
Hmm.
Did you see it?
No, I did not see that. I thought you were going to say something else, but
No, and he wrote this as deacon because he's been going through the diaconate. So he's now, I guess, a deacon.
Cool.
And it was really wonderful. It started off with kind of a self-examination. You know, we like to say, oh, these people do this and these people do that. And he's like, have you looked at yourself? Have you looked at what you say? Have you looked at who shares it? Have you gone to where they've shared it and seen the comments that other people have made? That shows you what vibe you're giving off.
Hmm.
Now, say you're saying nothing that's really objectionable, at least from a Catholic point of view. Say you're, you know, a very good person who, you know, even a priest or somebody who's talking about pro-life and you're never saying mean things about the other people. But if that's all you're talking about, pretty soon your group that you're communicating with become rigid. So he takes you through all this stuff and then kind of says, here's how you need to look at everything. Are you doing too much of this or this or this? How much time are you spending on it? So the whole thing comes down to this questionnaire at the end where here's some questions to ask yourself. And it was really good.
Hmm.
And
nice.
It's the kind of thing that it could be, I think it would surprise all of us probably.
Yeah. Okay. I'll look for that. Yeah. Please do send me the link.
Yeah.
Because no, I have not seen that.
And that's what, and in essence, it's funny because that's such a Catholic way to look at it is go, I'm in the community, I'm doing this stuff. Whoa, self-examination time.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I didn't see these Puritans doing that, although they did have their public confession. I took the cup way too late, he says this. But, you know, they would confess things to each other out loud.
But yeah, so, you know, he confesses, yeah, too late. After Thomason has already been accused.
Well, and there was something else. There was a whole coming of age situation where there's all this conflict between the mother and the oldest daughter.
Right. Yep.
The mother is not fair to her oldest daughter.
Right. Not at all. Mm-mm. Not at all. In fact, she was ready to send her down the road.
Yep.
Well, to bring her back to town.
Well, but I would say there was something I did find that I thought was interesting because I took that as a bad thing. But I found something that said that they believed that separating the adolescents from their mothers. Okay. Well, this is from Wikipedia. But while Puritans praised the obedience of young children, they also believed that by separating children from their mothers at adolescence, children could better sustain a superior relationship with God.
Okay.
So that may have been something that they did is, you know.
So, yeah, kicking them out of the nest.
Send you off to somebody else's house to live for a while. Because
Right.
In fact, thinking of the Salem witch trials, I felt like there was something like that where somebody, but maybe, never mind.
Okay.
Skip it.
Yeah, so interesting. So that may have been a normal thing to do.
But it wasn't brought up in a normal way. You're right. It was brought up as punishment.
Right. And therefore, what your point was earlier, you know, he could have told us that.
Yeah.
The director could have told us that was normal.
Yeah.
And maybe
if the daughter
was worried about
like,
it because she knew she was getting to the age where she'd be leaving and she didn't want to leave. But instead, that came out of the blue.
Right.
Yeah. So that is an interesting approach of his, you know, to just make that assumption and then just say, okay, I'm going to tell this from their point of view as if their worldview was true and I'm just going to let her rip. It was interesting. I did like it, like I said. It didn't feel like a normal movie. And in fact, it didn't even really feel like a horror movie to me. It was almost a drama, and the supernatural was just barely there until the end.
Yeah, you know? It was there, but it was...
But like you said, it was really the family that was falling apart.
Yeah,
they didn't need the witch.
Yeah, I think because the witch was not really a main player, just on the edges. You're right, you'd see the hare, or you would see the goat, or you'd see, you know, the woman and the baby.
Well, you have this difficult family, right? And then the witch pressuring them supernaturally, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be an oppression like that. And then when she took the infant, you know, that was that started all the dominoes falling.
Well, yeah. And I really felt that when Thomason and the little girl were going, I'm the witch and I'm going to do this. And she's like, no, I'm the witch. And I started getting really creeped out because I'm like, yeah, that little girl's pretty creepy. She could be the witch. And then I went, wait, they're right next to the woods. This, I feel, is an evil influence on both of them, pushing them in this direction. Because right before that, you know, the young boy is getting closer to adolescence. And so whenever his sister's asleep or something and he walks by and there's some cleavage, he's taking an extra look, which is... If he was in the community, he'd have other girls to look at or he'd have other things to think about maybe. But he's struggling with this temptation and the sister right before all that, I'm the witch, or right after one way or the other, calls him over and has him sit on her lap and is cradling his head against her chest. And I don't think on her part it was a conscious temptation.
Yep.
But for him, you just look at it and go, oh, my gosh, don't do that. And I just felt like that was every malign influence pulling out, you know, just all the things they could do that were just bad for each other.
Yeah. Yeah. So at that time, I felt, you know, that kid, the boy, something was going to happen there.
Yeah.
But then the thing that did happen wasn't what I thought was going to happen. I thought he was going to become actively dangerous.
Oh,
but then instead what happened is he wanted to get some apples, right? You know, he wanted to please her.
Yeah, he was
really
trying to be nice to the family.
He was trying to be nice to the family. and maybe in his own way atoning for his feelings. And but anyway, out he goes in the woods, and then well, Thomason was with him too. But
right, they get separated. They get separated,
right? And then he gets really killed by witchcraft.
Well, and that was the thing where I started to go, yes, he's a young innocent boy, and I'm angry on his behalf. But I felt like that's where I felt like the filmmaker wasn't playing fair. He was trying to be good. He was saying his prayers. He was doing everything he knew to put himself under God's protection and be closer to God.
Mm-hmm.
And this evil still can just bam. You know, I felt like that. And
thus the horror, no?
Well, I guess you're right. I guess that is the horror of it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's horror. But again, I feel like if you don't give people a chance somehow, I guess you're right. I guess that's horror.
Well,
but
just,
somehow I got a feeling from this that I did not get from the movie I've mentioned so many times, Let the Right One In. Hmm. And that's a true horror
film.
Which
I still need to watch.
ends with, yeah. I would say, the most pure look at evil I have ever seen. I mean, you just are shown, and it's creepy. And it's not in something horrific.
Hmm.
It's in the situation you wind up with. And the reality that you suddenly realize it all kind of falls into place. But the thing is that in this, I get that, you know, you have the witch and you have the goat who's the devil, and you get all these various things that are popping up and doing stuff. But it almost felt like a haunted house, because I couldn't see a lot of the connections to anything that was really going on. And maybe that would have been helped if I'd have known what the Puritans thought, or maybe they would have felt as chaotic. It was as chaotic as I did. But even though you're telling this old story, you're telling it to somebody who doesn't get all that stuff. You have to help me a little.
Hmm.
That's how I felt.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. You know, I still thought it was interesting from that aspect.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just because it felt so different from, you know, what we normally would see.
And you're right. You're
absolutely right. Some of the things that I would have felt would be foreshadowing, like I said, like that boy. You know, my next thought was what he was going to do now, and it ended up not being true. And then, you know, his death spurred her being accused of being a witch.
Right.
Which was the final thing to fall. So it opened the door. So there was a purpose in the story for it. That was really the final thing.
I kept expecting that father to do something terrible with the axe. You know, he was always chopping wood, and the wood pile was almost taller than the house.
Right. Yeah.
And I was just like, don't pick up the axe right now. Now's not a good time for cutting wood.
Right.
With the kids locked in the barn. What is wrong with you?
Oh, man. Yeah, that was wild.
And I was like, no, don't wait till tomorrow morning to leave. Leave now.
Mm. Yeah, go now.
Well, and there was the whole thing with the mother where she sees the apparition of the little dead boy and the baby.
Yeah.
And Rose was saying she felt that she invited the devil in by what happened, right, with the crow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I don't think so. I felt like she was fully fooled, and she thought it was the baby, and she was going to nurse the baby. So she was also a victim, I guess, because of her own failings in general, and not because she gave any tacit agreement.
Hmm.
I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking about that. I hadn't thought about it that in those specific terms. So, because she did lose it there at the end. So I mean, whether she was possessed of the devil or something like that. So it's just a matter of seeing what you believe, or believing what you see, or wanting it so badly that she would accept anything for it. But we didn't see her accept anything, right? I don't recall that.
No, they
anything
just said
specific,
the little, yeah,
but
the
what,
little
what
boy.
She thought she saw was the devil.
Yeah, she thought she saw the little boy holding the baby. That's what she thought.
Is it because that's what she wanted to see?
I think that's just what she saw.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all we're shown
until
the very end of it.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yep. And then out she comes after Thomason. That was a tough deal too.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. But then after all that, that last scene just, it did blow me away.
With the witches in the circle?
No, the one where she basically makes the deal and.
Oh yeah. Where she deliberately goes, well, let's see, the whole family is dead through horrifying violence and evil things.
Yeah.
It was, and I thought, like, she would just kind of like pack up and wander back into town going, oh.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I thought was going to happen too. And then, you know, when she walked in there and then started talking and she's like, is any of this really true? And yeah,
what will you give me?
Right.
And again, because I don't know that mindset, I have a more modern mindset, and I know this is really the modern way to look at it. But what I wanted her to say was, I wanted somebody to win. Nobody won. And I guess that's what makes it a horror story. But she, when she's like, he's like, you could have whatever you want. She's like, well, what I want. And what I wanted her to say is, what I want is my family back. You know?
Yeah. Right.
Because,
she said, because her reaction was, well, what can you give?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, do you want to live deliciously? You know? And
yeah,
this is what I can give you. And yeah.
Yeah. But I just looked at that and I thought, you have just seen everything that happened to all these people who did not cooperate. Why on God's green earth would you then go, well, I'm going to go look for him now? I guess because she hated the Puritan life so much. But again, we're not really told that.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, it is up to us to fill that in, but that's kind of what I think at this point is, she saw the example of the Puritans and it got her where she was. And she was taken away from what she loved twice, right? Mm-hmm. Once from England and once from the plantation.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and she had nothing left.
Well, okay.
You know, and
I guess calling on God didn't save anyone.
Again, you know, like you were saying, you know, the complete lack of community at that point, she's not going to make the right decision. I know I've said this. I know I've said this before, but I had a good friend who is an Episcopal priest. I haven't seen him for years, but he told me one time that, you know, I needed to talk about my thoughts because if you think about them in isolation, you go down crazy roads. You need to say them out loud.
Yeah.
Because once you do that, you know, sometimes you realize immediately, oh, that was silly. I thought that was really, really profound last night at 2 a.m, but it turns out it wasn't, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you know, in the light of day when you say it out loud, you're like, oh, yeah, that really doesn't make any sense at all. So, throw that aside.
Yeah, and as we've said, that's the value of confession.
Of community,
because people say, I can get
too.
God to forgive me. Well, yeah. But, you know, there's something about having to say that out loud. There's something with another person listening. Even a priest who doesn't know you, who's being non-judgmental, who's going to give you absolution, who's going to, you know, it's hard sometimes, and it should be hard.
Hmm.
But nobody in this family, although they did do the, you know, public confession, you know, but they were in that closed community where nobody could hear it dispassionately or even from just a larger understanding of things, you know.
Right.
There was no absolution for anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, and then so Thomason had the ultimate lack of community right there.
Yeah, wow.
But then she chose it too, right? She chose it after that. She chose, this is now my permanent state. Unless she viewed it as joining another community, which is why some people join things, right?
I guess some
people join things that I would personally call dangerous or misguided.
Right, but you're so hungry for that sense of belonging.
Yeah.
Or something else that you've been promised, and these other people are there validating it.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. And maybe she was afraid to go back. You know, she was covered in blood. You know, she was definitely in shock. And again, we're talking about the position of the women in this society. If she went back, what if she was accused of being a witch?
No, that's true. Although they don't show us any of that. So that's just what we ponder after seeing it. they, and I did think it was interesting that there were all these other young girls who were witches also, all naked and elevating, you know, floating. And I was like, okay, I get that's what they thought, but that looks like the stupidest thing I've ever seen. I'm sorry, modern sensibility. I'm like, now, really?
When Willy Wonka went in there and he had the soda thing and they went in the air, that was awesome. You can't tell me that wasn't awesome. What they call that, super fizz drink or something like that.
Yeah, but he had his clothes on.
Well, he did.
Thank
was it
Lord.
That way in the novel? It probably was.
I right. don't feel like he ever stripped down to that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just, for me, I found the story of the family really interesting. The whole dynamic felt very true.
And that's really what it was about, I think.
Yeah, it's in the way that we don't support each other and little things turn into big things. And then the dysfunction of like one set of relationships bleeds over, as you said, into others. But I don't know. For me, I had to actually think about it later after I'd already kind of watched and gone, what? So
but it did make you think about it, though. It wasn't a movie that you felt was unworthy of considering.
No. It's definitely worth considering. It's got a lot in it to think about. I hated it, but I hated it because of some of the things I've talked about with the lack of storytelling. I could have even taken the way it ended and everything, but we needed to see a little more inside their heads.
Mm.
And I know that the ancient transcripts that he used didn't actually tell you that, but that's the point of being a storyteller in this day and age. If you're not communicating with everyone, although it was super popular, everybody loved it, but me, evidently, and two other pranks in a corner somewhere without any community.
No community. Yeah.
And my husband.
Uh-huh.
We're in community on this thing. We are totally going to get each other to, you know, movie heaven.
Right. Yeah, so when I watched it, after I watched it, and I knew how you felt about it.
Yeah.
I was, in my head, I was thinking, you know, I'm sure that she didn't like that there was no redemption, and you have mentioned that.
Yeah.
Because there are other movies, the one that leaps to mind, and there are other reasons for this one too, but The Cabin in the Woods. I know you really, really disliked that.
Yes, I did.
And one of the reasons for that too, I know it wasn't the only reason, but one of the reasons for that too was there was no hope.
Right.
There
and
was
that's
none,
what I...
none whatsoever.
Right. Which is this movie, essentially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you're
it's
right.
the same,
you're
type,
very right.
same type of thing. Yeah.
That's how the world ends.
All sin,
basically.
No redemption. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's missing the important part of the story. I mean, the Christian story without the resurrection and the redemption.
Well
what is it? You know, it's.
Yeah, it's nothing.
Yeah. You've got to have that other piece.
Well, it's like our priest said one time, and I can't remember if I've said this before or not. He's like, well, you know, if they say in one of those things that's always bogus, like around Easter time, they're like, a tin found with Jesus's bones in it. He goes, well, if they found Jesus's bones, I would just have to become Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
That just means we're wrong about that part of the story. It's still coming.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, and you're right, though, I forget that's what makes it a horror story. The horror, really, in Cabin in the Woods, although it was a humorous takeoff on it, on the traditional horror story, there is no hope. And maybe that's why one of my favorite new modern ones is Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Yes, you told me about that and I saw it. And I did indeed laugh.
And I was shocked because, you know, they've got all the chainsaws and all the traditional horrible things. And my husband loved it. He hates that kind of movie.
Oh,
he
man.
Loved it so much. I was stunned.
Alan Tudyk? Tudyk?
Yeah.
I can't remember how you say his name, but that guy is a national treasure.
Oh,
I can't wait. You know, I know that he's famous and everything, but I'm just waiting for him to hit the next level because I think that he will. He's just so good. Somebody needs to build some stuff around him. Because I just love watching him. Everything I can see.
I agree. He's a favorite of mine.
But him in that movie, you know, every time, you know, people are killing themselves by accident.
Tied to the tree, and he's like, go get her, buddy. You can do it. You're worth it.
Oh, what a movie. Yeah. So see that, folks. However, we should warn you that there is a lot of gore in that movie.
Yeah.
As is Cabin in the Woods. Cabin in the Woods is also very gory. But they're both sort of the same horror tradition, kind of a comedy horror.
Yeah, the slasher movie, the kids off for, you know, that retreat in the woods when they're graduating from high school, all that stuff. That's what those are. Well, and that's so that's the horror. The real horror of a horror movie is no hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And so,
movies since the last time we talked about horror movies with Hannah.
Yeah.
Right? Didn't we have a Hannah horror movie? We did with Hannah and Rose for Aliens.
Right.
But we did one with just Hannah that was about horror, I think.
Well, it was Halloween.
It was Halloween of last year. Yeah.
It was last year.
Yes. Okay. But yeah, I watched It Follows, and she mentioned that.
Did you like it?
Yes. It is disturbing, but it was very odd. Not unlike this one in a way, in that it was clearly its own time, right? This one is its own, you know, we're in the 17th century and it's got that tone about the look to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
This one had that same kind of thing. You could tell that it wasn't here, kind of.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? It wasn't any time that you could really point to. And these are things like furniture and just various clues. Mm-hmm. It was like here, but it wasn't really quite here. So it had that strange quality. But then there's just something really effectively horrifying about the evil in that show.
Oh, okay.
That, It Follows.
Well,
but I watched it not long after that podcast, and I can still remember it clearly, which...
Well, and see, I think the thing is that this is why I went back to Young Goodman Brown after watching this movie, because it does not have, as you know, like Tucker and Dale versus Evil, where there's a good ending and all this stuff. It leaves it much more nebulous, which is at least gives you something to think about and hope for. And when Young Goodman Brown comes back, he has been changed by his experience, and not for the better, because he took the absolute worst out of it you could. But what you can do is look at it yourself and say, well, hold on. He's accepting as absolute these things he was told, when we can see actual kind of proof that maybe some of these things aren't really true.
Yeah.
The devil is the master of lies. And actually, as I said, I'll put a link to my Forgotten Classics, because I just went ahead and downloaded what I'd done. I hadn't listened to it since I put it up there. And I was surprised. I was going, oh, I actually have some thoughtful commentary on things like that.
Nice.
And so I was like, wow, I was smarter than I thought. But one of the things is Nathaniel Hawthorne leaves it open. Now, there are stories he doesn't leave open. Another favorite of mine is Rappaccini's Daughter.
That one I have not read.
Yeah.
Is that, would you call that a horror story?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Cool. I got to read it. I'll try to read it before Halloween.
Yeah.
I haven't, it's like mid-October. I have done not enough Halloweening this year.
Well, it's not a book. It's like a long short story. It's not even a novella size.
Cool.
I think I did it in two pieces when I read that for Forgotten Classics also.
Yeah, fantastic. I'll get it
So it's long, but it's not that long. Okay. You can just easily read it.
Okay.
But yeah, that one has more definite things happening.
Yeah. So we'll put a link to these from Forgotten Classics on the post for this podcast. So don't let me forget. Yeah.
I will look for those.
Cool.
But I think I'm always going to have a problem with things that leave you absolutely no hope, unless this person has turned away from hope themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'm a bad person to have watch horror movies, because I understand a bad ending, but it has to, the person can't have just been shunted along, and I don't understand what's going on with it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I do. I understand that.
So, yep. I'm sorry. I guess I've said it about 50 times. Sorry.
No. Makes sense. It makes sense. Oh, wonderful. Well, anything else we want to add about the witch?
Wow, I can't think of anything.
Yeah.
How about you?
I wanted to say just one more thing about the director. So he's a guy that I hadn't heard of before now, but he seems to be very highly regarded. I don't quite understand how these things work in Hollywood. but as a director, this is his first film. And as a director, he's got some other credits here, but he did a video short of Hansel and Gretel, it looks like, in 2007. And then he did The Telltale Heart as a short in 2008. And then The Witch came out in 2015, and this is his first film as a director. And yeah. I look at his writing credits. He wrote all of his projects. And his next project... well, it looks like it's out already. It's not upcoming. It's called Brothers, and I have no description of that. But it's also a short.
Okay.
So, I love Poe, so I just definitely want to see The Telltale Heart if I can find it somewhere.
I know. Maybe YouTube or...
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing, because I had the same feeling. People speak of him in these tones like they're bowing down and kissing his feet. And based, I guess, on this movie.
Yeah, so it was because this was like a Sundance movie. Maybe that's what it's all about. It was like one of those movies that just hits a home run at Sundance. I say just as if it's no big deal. Yeah, I've had several of those. So maybe he hit it big. Everybody at Sundance loved it, and then that sort of put him on the track.
Yeah, started building the reputation.
Yeah, maybe I just kind of assumed that he had this reputation before the movie, but maybe not. In the interview that I listened to, he said he reads things like, 17th century fiction for fun. This is what he likes.
Mm-hmm.
And someone asked him about his religion, and he said that he didn't want to talk about it specifically because he said it was very complicated. And then there was like a little bit of silence where the interviewer was like, and,
I don't know what that means.
And, so he just said, well, there's myth and there's religion and all this stuff. And I read it all the time. I like it more than I like movies. That was almost his direct quote. So,
That which doesn't mean anything.
It means nothing specific, right? It just means that he likes, as an observer, all of it, right?
Maybe kind of like C.S. Lewis, who was so in love with fairy tales and stories and myth and everything, and it took meeting Tolkien and, there was another person too who stayed even later than Tolkien and talked to him, those two people who were kind of able to bring it into a focus where he went, oh my gosh, it all fell into place.
Yeah.
Maybe he's like that. He's just interested in all that stuff. And so that's why.
I went through something similar too.
Yeah. Maybe this movie was part of that exploration for him because
I'm sure
he was fascinated by that time period anyway. And of course, any American settlers, religion is going to be a big part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. For sure.
So
cool. All right. Well, if that's a wrap on talking about the witch, we've got one more little piece of Halloween. We cheated. We're gonna release this early, so that we could get one more in October. But we're gonna talk about The Halloween Tree by Ray Bradbury.
Is there
a book that feels more like Halloween than The Halloween Tree?
No.
I don't know if there is.
Maybe, if you're an American growing up from a certain time, especially.
Right, right. Maybe Something Wicked This Way Comes, which we've talked about in the past.
Right.
That is another one that, to me, doesn't that open with October is a good month for boys or something like that?
Yes.
It's a line that pops in my head every October 1st.
Oh, yeah. And Bradbury loved Halloween.
Yeah.
Which is real evident in this book we're going to talk about next.
Big time. Can't wait.
So, it's a great choice. And it's read by Bronson Pinchot, who is just amazing.
He is really, really something else, Bronson Pinchot.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I started listening.
Go ahead.
And then I went, wait till after.
There are some narrators that, you look for this way. or I yeah. do. No, and he's, I do. He's definitely one of them. So I'm looking forward to listening to this again.
Yeah.
The Halloween tree. Yeah.
Yep.
So, okay. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. All right.
Happy Halloween.
Yes.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.